Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. Welcome back to another edition of Covered in Glory. And Brett, it is the last one, the last time we are going to talk about the Premier League until Boxing Day, because for the first time in history, we are going to break up the domestic season. We are going to stop down for about 6 weeks in order to let the greatest single sporting event in the world take place. And we are only a week away. How are you feeling?
Oh, I mean... there are so many reasons why we shouldn't be excited, but I can't help but do it. I was watching the video of Matt Turner kind of talking about his story, and it was giving me goosebumps. Like, he's talking about 2010 and how he watched it with his friends, and that kind of put him on his path. And now he's just starting goalkeeper for the U.S. team. And it just got me ready, baby. I was excited. I was smiling ear to ear. I was like, man, this is what it's all about. I can't wait.
Yeah, well, this is a really weird show for us to do this week. So I hope we're all friends now. You might give us a little bit of a hall pass. Like, no matter how much you love your job or you love school or you love anything else, that like last day before vacation, when you're just staring at the clock, you're not doing your best work. You're not your most productive. You're not going to get the most things done. You're not the most attentive person. So we're going to get through these games just like the players are, because you think we're distracted. All of them named to national team squads and have to get on a flight next week. And they're still having to play a game this week, which is, as we were talking about, unprecedented. So let's stare at that clock together. But before we do, Brett, one tip for the audience. So we are going to be doing a lot of World Cup content. We'll be with you each kind of set of games, you know, for the first set in the pool play, second set, third set, then each round of the knockout rounds. We'll, of course, be diving deep into the Stars and Stripes and then talking about a lot of the other games we want. So we're not going anywhere, folks. You can't get rid of us that easily. We will be here for the World Cup. But I wanted to talk about one World Cup thing before next week, just in case you want to do it, which is my actual favorite way to gamble against my friends for the World Cup. I don't know if you have a favorite way, Brett, or you just stick to more solo action, you and your spreadsheets. But
spreadsheets. I don't have friends. You're my only friend.
Oh, man. You assume too much. So in the last 20 years, I've done this bull every single time for the World Cup, which is you get either three of your friends or seven of your friends. It's very important that you have either four or eight. And then sit around at a table, you take $100, and then you have an auction, and you have to auction off all 32 teams. That's why you have to have either four or eight participants, because the entire key is you can't just spend $96 on Brazil and then not have a penalty at the end. Every team's going to get auctioned off. So if you overspend at the beginning, hello, Iran. Hello, Qatar. Hello, like some of the also-rans that are going to really drag down your portfolio. And then the scoring is really simple. You could do it in Excel. It's just 3 points for every win, 1 point for every draw, 0 points for a loss. However many points you accumulate over the month, that person gets the pot. Play for pints like we do, play for, you know, a little bit of steaks, pay for gummy bears, play for whatever you want. But it is incredibly fun and incredibly easy to administer. And I encourage anybody within the sound of my voice to get a couple of pals and do this, because I've never had anyone do it and say, oh, I wish we hadn't, you know, gone through with that. And it makes a Russia versus, you know, whoever game in 2018 a whole lot more interesting.
I love it. That's great. I might have to steal that, but I need friends first. So I'll try to go on Twitter and just talk to all the new blue verified check marks and see if they'll be my friend.
Oh, it's going to be embarrassing when you get beat by seven bots.
Yes, that would just be the ultimate sadness in my life right there.
All right, so with that little tip, do that this week before we are back next week doing our World Cup preview and diving into the first round of games. But we got one last little bit of business in the Premier League, Brett, so you want to rip through one last week of action before we are off to the granddaddy of them all?
Oh yeah, like you said, it's that last day before break, but let's do it.
All right. Well, we don't have any big six matchups this week, but that does bring us to our most important thing to talk about. Is it still a big six, Brett? Because we have Newcastle third at 27 points versus Chelsea seventh at 21 points. This game is Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Newcastle is plus 127. Caesars is plus 210. The draw is plus 235. Our friends at Caesars have Newcastle minus half a goal at plus 130 and Chelsea minus 170 to get a result. All right, Brett, we've teased it for several weeks. In fact, I've been teasing it for a year. I think it's time. I think it's finally time to pronounce the age of the big six is over. All hail the age of the big seven. They might have despicable owners, but how can you keep them out at this point? They are third in goals generated. They are first in goals against. They're also first in clean sheets. They're third in XG. They're doing everything necessary to prove that they are not a fluke. They are not a one-game wonder. They are setting off on this run of sustained excellence. They have incredibly rich owners. They have a large, storied stadium. They have an actual history. And I feel like we're watching Manchester City like be born again out of the primordial ooze, and a copy of them is taking over the league. Eventually, they're just going to be Spider-Man pointing at each other, and the rest of us are going to be fighting for scraps. Trippier, Bruno, Almiron, all among the best in their positions this year. They have plenty of reserves in finance. They're not having that hard of a time recruiting, despite the sport washing. They're clearly the third best team after 14 games, and I see no reason they're going to regress this year. I see no reason they're going to regress in future campaigns. So it might take a little bit while more for the rest of the soccer world to recognize it, but I am saying right here, right now, that the Big Seven has arrived. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this has been kind of our underlying tone, and every time we've talked about them, you know, for the last couple of months, I definitely wasn't expecting it to come along this quickly. I think part of the reason that they're accelerated into this conversation, into breaking up this top six monopoly, or maybe just replacing United as a sixth team, they don't have the European competitions. And in a schedule that's as congested as this right now, that's going to be a massive advantage. So I think it's going to be part of the reason why we are looking at them seriously as a Champions League contender, why I think their ceiling might even be as high as second. It's an inevitability, right? Like, we knew this was going to happen when money from these state sponsored clubs like comes in. It's an inevitability before they become good. The timeline has shifted, but like, I think they're there now. They're like, you mentioned all the numbers, like they're third in XG difference per 90 in the Premier League. And there's a pretty big gap between them and Brighton in fourth. They're not going to really have that many players that are going to be run down by the World Cup. Like, Trippier is going to England. Colin Wilson got called up. Bruno Guimarães is going to be obviously playing for Brazil. But like, other than that, like, most of this team is going to have like a little bit of a break, or they're not going to play that much for the national teams. So, I mean, they could go into the second half and just be a buzzsaw, through the league. And then all of a sudden we're looking at them in second place by the time the year ends.
Yeah, I think we'll probably open after the World Cup, after that excitement dwindles out, our next show about the Premier League. We'll do some futures and what we like for after the restart. And I haven't looked at the Newcastle futures quite yet, but I guarantee I'm going to be all over them. Like, I almost don't care what the number is. There's no reason to believe that they are going to suddenly like fall way off. And it's wild to think that this time last year, I was telling you that they weren't going to get relegated and you disagreed with me. I don't know if you want to drag that ancient history back up, but they've come so far so fast. They made a couple of key signings and their manager has been way better than expected. I mean, did you ever expect this out of him?
Eddie Howe has been way better. I mean, the one thing too, even talking about that relegation thing from last year, is they have really been able to hit on every single signing. And then we mentioned it in a recent podcast that, you know, guys like Almiron have gotten better. Like, Almiron was looking like a dude that was a Premier League bust. You know, we were probably going to see him out of the league. He was going to be playing for some random mid-table like French team or something. And now he's an integral part of what they're trying to do. So a lot of that, you know, I mean, there's a million factors that go into these things. But part of that has to be with the way that Howe has structured this team, how he's empowered these guys to maybe be the best versions of themselves. That internal development is definitely something that you always probably link back at least a little bit to the manager. But overall, they've been really structured. They have a clear identity of what they're trying to do. They've been really good defensively, which was kind of like Howe's like downfall at Bournemouth. But you know, looking back at Bournemouth now, that team didn't have a ton of resources. The players just weren't that good. And, you know, managers for the most part, like they don't move the needle unless they're Pep or Klopp or, you know, a handful of others maybe. So I think Howe has a good enough pieces. We're seeing a little bit more of like what he can do when he has the resources behind him. And yeah, I mean, this, it's been surprising. I never thought I'd be like sitting here like Eddie Howe's going to manage a Champions League team. I thought he was kind of like the bridge to like getting them to respectability and then somebody else is going to come and take over, but he's the guy now.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the most impressive things about their season thus far and the way they're building it is not the players they've necessarily signed, which have been impressive and their hit rate has been incredible. It's been avoiding like the high profile disasters that could have sunk the team down. And so like often a nouveau rich club like this.
So basically the Manchester United school of signing players.
No, I mean, exactly right. I mean, like United had their sustained run of success. And so, you know, you can't take away all their history. But when money comes into a club like this and, you know, the sport washing commences, like I will admit we saw it at Chelsea, you know, 20 years ago, right? Like five or six massive signings, and then some of them worked out and some of them didn't, and a lot of them were bought for profile, like the Shevchenkos of the world. But they haven't done that. Like they often come up in rumors like, okay, well, that's where Ronaldo is going to end up, or Pulisic is unhappy at Chelsea and he's been underperforming, but they'll be happy to have him for commercial purposes or whatever it might be. They're not making commercial purposes signings. They have signed really smart talent, plug them in, let them coalesce, and avoided bringing in guys that could absolutely tank that chemistry and tank that process. So I think what they haven't done in many ways is just as important as what they have done.
Agreed. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, and just the practicality of like what they did too. You know, when the ownership group came in, this team was looking like they were destined to be relegated. And what did they do? Like they didn't go out and just sign like the biggest big name defender. Like they got in Dan Byrne and like Trippier was kind of on the outs at Atletico. You know, so they bring in these guys that just kind of stabilize the defense that were upgrades over the, you know, probably championship level talent that they had there. And that was it. Like it wasn't anything super flashy. It wasn't everything super exciting. They just brought in better players than the guys that were currently there. It stabilized them. And then they moved forward from that.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird to watch somebody with unlimited funds, like successfully moneyball, right? Like,
yeah,
they're the opposite of Chelsea. Chelsea just keeps throwing, you know, bukkaking $200 million at a transfer window and hoping it all works out. And they're just not making it strategical purposes as like Newcastle, who actually has the money to do so. So do you think going forward, like we'll see this model continue? Do you think we'll see them? I mean, nobody hits 100% on all their signings, right? So eventually they're going to have some people not work out. They're not always going to get this goal that they keep panning. But I mean, you think they'll be more like a Liverpool where they're plugging in three or four smart signings and two of them are hitting and then rinse, wash, repeat, transfer window after transfer window, and suddenly you have a juggernaut? Do you think they're going to eventually say, oh, now that we have proof that we can compete, now here's our Chelsea window where we buy everyone not nailed down? Do you think it's going to be like City where it's somewhere in between those things? How do you think they're going to move forward to have staying power? And if they do, do you agree with me that like, this is a big seven unless one of the historic six falls out?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think to answer the first thing, yes, absolutely. This is a big seven unless we see something where the bottom falls out at one of the current big six. But I also think that, you know, if you have to judge them by the pattern that we've seen so far, and really like, you know, Alexander Isaac, he's been hurt. When he came over from Real Sociedad, he was supposed to be like their big flashy attacking and signing. But so we don't really know. That could be like one of their misses. I think the answer to our question is going to be if they finish top four, which in my opinion, they're favored to do at this point. If they finish top four, how do they approach it then when they have the lure of the Champions League? Are they still going to sign the Brunos and the Alexander Isaacs, who are, you know, good, talented players, but like not the names? Or now that they have the Champions League, are they just going to be throwing their cash at anybody who wants to come play Champions League football in the Premier League? So I think we'll get our answer if they end up top four. My gut says they have looked at City probably as the model, you know, and City never broke the bank. Like when you look at all the massive transfer fees, even with Haaland, they are not up there with any of their players. Like, they didn't spend the Dembele money, the Coutinho money, the Pogba money. Like, none of that stuff ever happened with them. And we saw in Barcelona, like, what that did to Barcelona, where they just threw massive transfer fees at, like, every player, and that stuff didn't really work out. So I think this ownership group, unfortunately, is smart. I mean, look, they had unlimited money, and one of the first players they bought, two players they bought, were Chris Wood and Dan Byrne. And one was poaching Chris Wood from a relegation candidate, a contender, and then Dan Byrne was just brought in just because he was better than the guys that they were playing. So, like, that tells me that there's definitely a process going on here. I don't think the Champions League would change that, but, you know, we won't know until we see it.
All right. Well, long term, we're obviously both very bullish and very afraid of them and what they represent to the league. Although, yeah, as we often say, you know, like, I'm obviously a huge Chelsea fan, and Newcastle's a threat to Chelsea, but I love seeing competitive fixtures up and down, and having Newcastle there and having them being as good as they are just means every single Saturday and Sunday there's another great team on the pitch to watch. And so it shows that the Premier League is the real Super League when a team like Newcastle can come in and continue to raise the level of quality of play throughout the entire division.
I mean, it's not going to be great that, like, two state sponsored teams are probably going to be at the top of the Premier League for a while. But I mean, like you said, I think the depth, I think my hope would be this team cracks the top seven, and then it's going to force these other teams to really hone in on their processes and maybe get rid of some of the inefficiencies that we've seen with the United transfer windows, with the Chelsea just throwing money at people. That would be the real hope for the positive effect of that happening.
Yeah, I mean, if we hadn't seen it happen at City and PSG, I would say that maybe there's some risk that players wouldn't play for a state-sponsored club, but come on, like, we're well past that Rubicon.
They're just going to where the money is at this point.
There's only 10 clubs in the world that can afford, you know, the salaries that these guys want. Newcastle's now one of them, so they're happy to play for them. So back to this game. I don't think it's going to be any surprise that I'm taking Newcastle over Chelsea. Chelsea is rolled over and played dead. Nobody needs the World Cup stoppage more than Chelsea does right now. We got to get back in the corner and try not to throw in the towel. We definitely are on a standing eight count. I mean, between injuries and between the recent run of form, that was a horrible game against Arsenal. They got beat yesterday. They haven't, you know, looked good outside of a Conor Gallagher miracle goal, in about a month. And so Newcastle minus half a goal at plus 130, like, I all day Newcastle at home with a plus number against a team that, you know, two thirds of them are already on the plane in their minds that are checked out. Like, I think this one could get ugly. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the same side of the fence as you. I there's just nothing about Chelsea that inspires confidence right now, you know? So you're talking about, it's just basically two teams going in opposite directions. We'll have probably a whole, like, Chelsea podcast at some point here. I can't put my finger on exactly where this slide is coming from. I really was thinking that Gallagher goal that you talked about was, like, going to be, like, a positive tipping point for them. But yeah, it's not good. And, you know, in the process of looking at the World Cup rosters, because, you know, got to bring it around back to that one more time. I was kind of shocked to see the Colin Wilson inclusion in the England squad, but then I looked at his underlying numbers and they're really good. And that actually inspired me for my prop bet with him, because he's plus 140 in a match where Chelsea has been leaking goals. He is the best bet to score a goal, and he takes penalties for Newcastle. And there's a nice plus 140 number right there. So that was my prop, man. It was nice. Like, the World Cup led me to a bet.
I like that one quite a bit. And Conor Gallagher made the England squad as well. So they are.
I know.
They're now blessed and destined to advance.
I hope you don't ever see some of the text messages I sent to certain people about that.
I hope you don't see the ones I sent about it, because they are pornographic. for my prop, I think we see the game fairly the same way. Like, you're taking a specific guy to score. I just think they're going to be plenty of goals. Like, Chelsea has just so much quality that I'm not going to guarantee they're going to get blanked. And so I can easily see them putting one on the board. And once they can put one on the board, and I think Newcastle still wins, Newcastle win and over 2.5 goals is plus 245. And wow. So I think you can get a 2-1. You can get a 2-1 Newcastle win, or you can get a 3-0 Newcastle win because Chelsea's sliding so far. And I think that's a great number for those two scenarios. I mean, it could even be 3-1 or 4-1, but at that point, you've already cashed the ticket long ago.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely feels like a multiple goals against Chelsea match, and that's a really nice number for that line.
Okay, so let us take a quick break after we really broke down Newcastle, then we'll be back with hopefully a couple of more nice numbers.
Your first bet with Caesars Sportsbook and Casino, it's on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code CZRFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet. That first bet also gives you 1,000 tier credits and 1,000 reward credits, putting you closer to the types of perks only Caesars can offer: free stays, game tickets, experiences, and more.
You must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ontario, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Ohio, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Yes, you have to know when to stop before you start. If you have a gambling problem in Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Virginia, West Virginia, or Pennsylvania, or if you know someone who has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, or in Maryland, visit MarylandGamblingMDGamblingHelp.org, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, DC, Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY. That's 467-369. Or text CONNEX to 247-247. Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789.
Okay, we are back. We are heading over to Manchester City, second at 32 points versus Brentford, 11th at 16 points. This is the early game on Saturday at 7:30 a.m. City is -750, Brentford is +1750, and the draw is +700. Our friends at Caesars have City -2.5 at +105 and Brentford -135. So, Rhett, Manchester City had a super fun game last week, having to play over an hour down a man after a moment of madness from Consuelo. It made it way more fun for me to watch. Like, you were trying to get me to turn over to that Leeds banger, but I wanted to see Manchester City, you know, down a player and see if it was more of an easy game against, or not easy, I'm sorry, a more equal game against Fulham. And it was really, really compelling. Like, Manchester City, despite being down a man, was a more dangerous squad, still like was doing Pep things, like keeping the ball away from Fulham and keeping them from getting a whole lot into attack. And to see them do that, you know, with that disadvantage was, it's kind of depressing actually to see them be able to do it. Really, so yeah. At the end of the day, it didn't matter. Fulham had an extra man because they did not have an extra Haaland, and that's all that mattered. Once he came out of the pitch, completely changed the game, had a goal almost immediately scored that was ruled for offsides, but then KDB wins a penalty. Haaland actually didn't get his best penalty on it, but still managed to score, and they get out of there with a 2-1 win that was extraordinarily more difficultly earned than they expected, but was still well earned at the end.
I gotta say one thing. It is amazing that this team has gone down early in matches twice now against two different teams in Copenhagen and Fulham, and they somehow still end up being on the front foot in those matches. It's nuts to me.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, I don't know. We talk enough about Pep, and I want to get to the World Cup, so we'll do it after the break. But just seeing things like that is so incredible to watch. Well, for this particular game, Brett, Haaland's about to have a month off, so I expect him to go nuts. I expect to see an amazing game out of him. And anytime you're expecting an amazing game out of that guy, then you have to like a lot of goals. And I don't think Brentford's going to score a ton, but they might get one. So the two things that I'm willing to take in this game are Manchester City -2.5 at +105. But the one I like a little bit more, because Brentford might squeak one out because Manchester City tends to play with their food, you can get the over 3.5 at -125 for my prop. And you can cover that by City going 4-0 or Brentford gets one. You can get a 3-1 win where you would lose the 2.5, but you'd win on this line.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, as you'll see from my five pint, where it's like consolidated into basically like three things, I really had a tough week trying to parse like where there were edges in these matches. I didn't like City covering 2.5. So Brentford is just a solid mid-table club. They've only been dominated really in one game, and it was a weird match against Villa where they gave up a penalty. It's like 2.8 to 0.9, like the XG. You know, they just got smashed basically by Villa. But that seemed like an outlier.
Didn't they get smashed by Newcastle? Was it in 5-1 to Newcastle?
It might have been, but it was very flattering to. I'm looking more of the underlying chances kind of thing.
But you and your spreadsheets.
I got to go to my spreadsheets, man. I don't go with luck. I go with the real numbers. XG comes for us all. But this is really the only game where they were like completely outclassed. And so that City line of -2.5 is so high. And I get Haaland's back and I get he's just wrecking the Premier League. But like, there wasn't any part of me that was like, this seems like a line that I feel confident in. And I hate taking spreads with a team that I feel has no win equity. But here's the thing I talked myself into, and I'm sure you'll find ways to mock me for this because I brought it up before. But City is now on their seventh match. This is their seventh match since October 22nd. Not even 3 weeks, and this is their seventh match. So Brentford at +2.5, like they got to keep it within two goals, and it's only -135. Like they can do that, right?
I don't know. I mean, I don't feel very strongly about either side of it. I feel more strongly about the goal total. One of the underlying stories of this entire weekend is, do the club team managers give any deference to the players' desire to not get hurt before the World Cup? And we might see some lineups that we are not expecting. And so, like, if KDB's out there, not out there because he has a ton of miles on his legs in the last 3 weeks and he's about to go off and compete in the thing that he's dreamed about since he was a little boy, like, maybe he's not on the pitch and then maybe that looks better. I think it's hard to record this on Thursday
afternoon. Or maybe he's subbed off at half, or maybe the 60th minute. Like, there's a bunch of scenarios in which, you know, they, like you said, they play conservatively. The games could be really slow paced because teams are just trying to like play really passive. So I had the under as my prop bet too, just throwing that in there. I agree with you, man. I think this is going to be really interesting to see because we've never seen this before. Like we brought up before, this is completely unprecedented. These guys are a week away. Like, it's just hard to imagine they're going to go full tilt into these games.
Especially after what they've seen recently, right? Like, Reece James is not going to miss the World Cup. Timo.
Mane is now out too. Like, yeah, he just Mane's missed
out. Timo just blew out his, his Achilles. He's going to miss it over in the Bundesliga. Yeah. Chile, like playing in a relatively meaningless game, is now going to miss the World Cup. And So if you're those players and you're a week away from the plane and representing your country, something you've always wanted to do and something you only get to do three times in your career, roughly, are they really going in late on a challenge? Like, are they really going full tilt? So it's on this Thursday afternoon. It's hard to predict any of this stuff with lineups and efforts, but underlying numbers, then I do mock you. I don't even think Brentford's mid-table. I think their most impressive performance recently was against Chelsea, and that looks less impressive in retrospect than Chelsea's current form. That's all right. To each their own. Let's keep it moving, Brett, because we got a World Cup to get to. Over to Tottenham versus Leeds. Tottenham 4th at 26 points versus Leeds 12th at 15 points. This game is Saturday at 10 a.m. Caesars has Spurs at -170, Leeds at +440, the draw at +310. Spurs -0.5 goal is -175, Leeds is +135. All right, Brett. Well, I'm going to clear out for you here. You have adopted Leeds as your new team, and they have a couple of really good performances recently, even though I have been mocking
really
them.
Good performances and super fun matches, by the way. For everybody watching, if you have not picked from a Premier League team yet, watch Leeds play. All right.
That was exactly what I was about to say. They had a cracker of a game last weekend. Their recent run of games haven't just been good results for them, but have been extremely entertaining. It's a wise move from you, abandoning dull old Everton for this sexy new play. But now, what do you think? Like, they have won back-to-back league games. Have they turned a corner, or is it just a lucky run?
Well, I mean, they were getting unlucky before this. I think that there's definitely a world in which these matches do not result in 6 points, but more like 2 points. And they're still probably just hanging out above the relegation zone. But I mean, they were getting unlucky before that. I mean, they absolutely obliterated Arsenal with the underlying numbers, and they still lost that match 1-0. Like, this team is definitely an upper half. This is a top 10 side probably at this point, that just wasn't getting the results. And this is another classic case, though, of they're coming into a team that is going in the wrong direction. Minus the fact that, like, Liverpool just really, I thought it was more Liverpool was bad in the second half than the Spurs were good. I know your boy came out in the 68th minute and, like, Kulusevski, like, that's your guy. But they, most of their shots, of their 11 of their 14 shots came in the second half. And most of those 11 actually came before Kulusevski came on. I think it was 6 or 7 of them came before he actually came on the pitch. So, like, that was screams to me that, like, this wasn't, oh, Kulusevski's back, like, Liverpool's or Spurs are back. It was more like Liverpool was playing like garbage. And then it followed up by, they went to Nottingham Forest midweek. They rolled out some of their best players. Like, Kane started that match and they lost to Forest. Forest had a red card. So, like, this is trouble. We talked about this with Spurs. Like, they're in trouble. So I'm looking at that Leeds plus 440, baby. And I'm throwing that down one more time.
Wow.
I'm doubling down on this too. Leeds scoring the first goal is plus 180. And I'm telling you what, Eric Dyer against that press would scare the living bejesus out of me if I was a Spurs fan. So we saw the mistake that he had in Liverpool. He had another one in the Champions League against Frankfurt. I think he has been playing really, really poorly, and it might just because he's played a ton. But I think this is a game where Leeds come out with a ton of energy. They've gone toe-to-toe with these big teams. We know Jesse Marsh is not going to back down or dial down the press against these teams. So I'm all in on Leeds winning, and I'm all in on Leeds' first goal. This is all Leeds all the time, baby.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could really put a pin in your balloon and deflate you, but I have to fade the Spurs. And so, like, regardless of who they were playing, I was probably going to take the other side. I'm not going to go all the way like you did. I'm not going to go to the 4-4-4, the 440 plus 440, but I am going to take them at plus half a goal at plus 135 to get a point here. Kulusevski did return. Which didn't
can you wrap yourself in an American flag when you say that?
Oh my gosh, wait till we tape next week.
Oh god,
dyed my hair red, white, and blue. So Kulusevski did return last week. He did make a difference immediately, creating a really excellent opportunity for Kane that he buried in the lower corner in a clinical fashion. He does make a huge difference for them, and he gives them a dash of hope for the restart. But they need the break more than any team besides Chelsea. And just having him back out there for a cameo isn't going to change the slide that they're in. So I think they're going to limp into the break. I think they're going to get a disappointing result. So, shocking to you, I'm actually backing Leeds this week after giving them a hard time the last two times we covered them. And then for my prop, we have talked a lot, you know, in this last 5 minutes about how entertaining these games are. I think that trend's going to continue. So both to score is yes, minus 150. It's not the greatest number in the world, but you expect more juice out of something that where so much firepower is out on the pitch and so much defense, and Eric Dyer is also lacking here. It's kind of like Homer Simpson said about beer. Leeds is like the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Their style is going to lead to plenty of opportunities on both sides. Kane, I think, can easily get on the score sheet, and not like either side is going to play a really compact, complex defense. So I think both of them are going to score, and I feel great about this number.
Yeah, and I mean, and our friend of the pod, Ryan O'Hanlon, wrote a really great piece on ESPN about Leeds as well, where their goal is to play that style, to create chances, to make games higher scoring. They want that type of match. So yes, Toby, come to the dark side. Goals, Leeds, all of it. I love it.
Yeah, well, I've got Star Spangled Banner started singing in my heart a little bit early, so it's transferred over to Leeds. All right, let's get to the next one. We're halfway through our six matches. The next one is Liverpool, 8th at 19 points. Southampton, 18th at 12 points. This game is Saturday at 10 a.m. Liverpool is minus 430. Southampton is plus 1100. The draw is plus 500. Liverpool minus a goal and a half is minus 145. Southampton is plus 115. So, Brett, I don't know about you, but I was not blown away by Poole's performance last week. One goal was the outright gift from Dyer that we've already discussed, where he headed the ball right into Salah's path to put a 1v1 versus Lloris. There was only one way that was going to end. The other one was almost a semi-giveaway where Salah's just hanging out at the 10 yards center of the box and nobody bothers to close him down. So he just gets a quick turn and snap shot. And before you know it, it's in the back of the net. Like, I can't believe this. Let the guy hang out in space when he's that deadly. They certainly paid the price for both of those mistakes. Liverpool looked a little better in midfield. Like, I was gonna say they looked a lot better, but I caught myself. I think they only looked a little better because it's hard to actually judge how anybody looks against Spurs, where they're so goddamn passive that it's hard to see if Liverpool's actually dictating it or the Spurs were just backing away.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't blown away. I mean, like, it was a great result for him. I had it in the 5 pint last week. I was more than happy to cash the check. But looking at him versus Southampton and looking at that big a number, minus 1.5, I mean, I can't stand to watch Southampton. I absolutely can't stand to watch them. But they've been repeatedly been playing games close on XG, even no matter what the score sheet said. The 4-1 loss against Newcastle, I was surprised to see when I looked at the underlying numbers. Southampton was 1.74 in XG. Newcastle was 0.86. So they doubled them up, even though they were down by 3 on the score sheet. They managed to draw against Arsenal, and they've only been truly dominated all season, besides the loss to Spurs on opening day, by Manchester City. And that's just true of basically everybody who's gone against Manchester City. So I don't love any of the numbers on here. I wouldn't back them with an actual bet, but because I always give a pick on this, having to make a choice, I think Southampton can keep it close again against a still underperforming Liverpool team. And I'll take them staying within one goal at plus 115.
Yeah, and I think this might change with Southampton. Their players aren't going to get magically better, but they do have a new manager, Nathan Jones. Our boy Ralph Hasenhüttl, bon voyage. Thank you for your weird 9-0 defeats to different teams. But Jones is actually coming from Luton Town. So Luton Town's like a pretty fun story. They made it all the way up to 6th in the championship. They made the championship playoffs last year, which means they had a chance to go to the Premier League for the first time in their history. And they are doing it with the 4th lowest payroll in the championship. So you can imagine 4th lowest payroll in the championship versus what it's like playing against a Premier League team. It was a pretty impressive accomplishment. And so Jones is very much in the newer school mold of, like, they're going to look a lot like Leeds. They were very aggressive pressing. They had one of the highest passes per defensive action, which is a metric that is used to measure kind of like the intensity of a press in the championship. And then Jones played a lot of really straight vertical passes when they regained possession, trying to play balls in the channels, trying to get guys after they win the ball in advanced areas through and on goal. So they're going to play like a really fun, I think, aggressive style. It's going to probably lead to a lot of high variance. And I don't trust Liverpool to not let teams score anymore, which is a very weird thing after a year ago. So my bets, I did the coward thing again where I avoided the spread. And I took 2 props. I think the over of 3.5 at minus 110 is a beauty. And I also love Liverpool to win, but both teams to score at plus 150. I do think that with Jones's ideas, if he can get him in time, we are going to see a pretty fun up and down type of match. And I just have no faith anymore in Liverpool's defensive ability. The idea of, like, picking a Liverpool clean sheet after I probably picked like 20 of them last year is just like so like revolting to me at this point. I don't even look at that line anymore. Yeah. So I really like that one. I think this actually may be a fun thing for the Premier League to get another mid-table team that plays a more exciting style. So I'll be interested to see what Nathan Jones does in Southampton.
I'm fining you if you don't pick a line starting after the restart. I'll give you a break today, but come on, man. Take a stand. Don't just take 2 props. I felt disgusted.
My catchphrase is the coward's way out. Take a stand.
I felt disgusted taking Southampton right there, but you know what? I did it. Come on. You're on a gambling show. Make a freaking big, Brett.
You are more man than me. I will give you that. You are more man than me. Toby, you are the alpha.
Oh, my gosh. All right, well... I don't know if this is an alpha pick or not, but it's one I like. It's a pure trend play, and sometimes I turn against trend plays when there's a managerial change, but this one just looks too good to stay away from. Southampton, 10-plus shots is plus 120. They have hit this number in 11 of their last 13 games. The two exceptions were against Man City, where Pep just chokes the life out of everybody, and then West Ham, where they had 9 and almost got to 10. So to get a plus number when they always find a way to fire off 10 shots, we're not talking shots on target. We're just talking about them spraying and praying. They always seem to do it. And I think getting a plus number is generous. And then you combine it with what you're discussing, Poole's dwindling ability to completely dictate the game and keep people away from the box where they can't fire off shots. And you put the two together, and I love this bet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for this. I think this game actually might turn out to be one of the most exciting ones of the weekend.
Cool. All right. Well, let us take one more break and Brett will be back with some more of his beta bets. Okay. It is officially 4:50 on Quinton Day with vacation staring us down the face. I have no thoughts on any of these games, but I'm going to try to conjure some up since the mic is live and I am apparently the alpha. Our last two games are Wolves 19th at 10 points versus Arsenal first at 34 points. Game is Saturday at 2:45 p.m. Arsenal is minus 185. Wolves is plus 490. The draw is plus 310. Caesars has Arsenal minus half a goal at minus 185 and the Wolves at plus 145. So, Brett, Arsenal outright destroyed Chelsea last week, even though it was only 1-0. After the game, I saw one of the pundits call it a 1-0 hammering. And they were absolutely right. That's what it felt like. Chelsea never felt like they had a chance. They never were able to get it together in attack. They weren't able to get it together in midfield. They, you know, Arsenal blew a couple of shots that probably could have been put, you know, in better locations on the frame. And then it could have been a rout. But Chelsea did not belong on the same pitch as Arsenal last week, as much as it pains me to say that. Meanwhile, Wolves are suddenly playing a bunch of high-scoring open matches that they are completely ill-suited to compete in. So I think putting, you know, those two things together, that Arsenal is going to slice and dice them wide open. And my bets reflect that. I'm going to adjust that line up. I'm going to take Arsenal minus a goal and a half at plus 145 rather than at half a goal at minus 185. And I'm taking them to keep a clean sheet on the other side. In fact, for my prop, I am combining the two, putting them together, having a little fun. Arsenal win by at least two and keeping a clean sheet. So a good team to do a great thing nets you plus 280.
All right. Well, first off, we got to give a shout out to Wolves' new manager, Julian Lopetegui, who is probably one of the greatest World Cup stories ever, in the fact that he was in Russia, I believe, in 2018 when he announced he was taking the Real Madrid job, and then Spain replaced him as their coach. So shout outs to him. That's legendary stuff. But as far as this match, nothing about this match seems legendary to me. Wolves are very bland and very bad. You talk about what the World Cup is going to be like for these players. Think of this Arsenal starting 11. Jesus and Martinelli and Gabriel are playing for Brazil. Ben White and Saka are going to be on England. And then you got Granit Xhaka is going to be a main cog for the Swiss. So it's like, this is going to be a match where I could see Arsenal literally just pass the ball around for 90 minutes and not even try to score. I think this is going to be a super ugly match. And again, coward's way out. I picked a line, but you know what line it is then? It's the draw. Plus 310. But I also, the one that I like the most in this match is the no on both teams' scores minus 105. Wolves' attack is pathetic. Arsenal has been hammering this kind of defensive, slow-paced possession style. They've been really good defensively, as is. I think even if Wolves win, it's going to be like a 1-0 fluke goal type of thing, and it's mostly going to be very hard for them to score. So I think an Arsenal clean sheet is a great possibility. I just like this line because I think it protects you from a result either way, because I think nil's in the score line for the losing team. So I'm not super excited. This match, it could be awful to watch. But I do kind of like that note about the scoreline.
Yeah. I wonder how much it matters to Arsenal to win this game so they can go into the break top of the table.
They kind of have to, right? You know, like, cause they are fighting for this Premier League title and they're going to have to deal with Europa and the layoff of these guys that are a bunch of these guys that are going to be playing for the World Cup. So this seems like something that they can't let their foot off the gas. Like City can mail it in against Brentford. I don't think that's the case with Arsenal.
Well, City can mail in against Brentford and only win 2-0. I mean, that's just how that's great true. The talent disparity is in that game.
That's true.
But if I was Arsenal, having the good vibes in my community and my fans and among the team and in that locker room, having 6 weeks to revel in the top of the table going into Boxing Day, like, I think that's worth fighting for here. And like, obviously I'm not on the plane to the World Cup. That was a huge mistake by the U.S. You have not seen the right foot I possess. But I would want to go after this and make sure that they stay top of the table for that break. And so I don't see them laying down quite as much as I see maybe some players on other team laying down. And I think that they're going to find a way to get a result here and carry those good vibes into this long extended break.
Nothing wrong with that logic.
All right, this is the 4:59 game. Fulham, ninth at 19 points versus Manchester United, fifth at 23 points. This game is Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Manchester United is minus 116. Caesars has Fulham at plus 290, and the draw is plus 275. Manchester United minus half a goal is minus 125. Fulham is minus 105. Brett, I have nothing. I don't want to talk about this one. You go first, and then I'll react.
All I'll say is this, the coward in me is just full on today. Couldn't figure this one out, especially with United just being so bland. So here's where I landed. The draw plus 275, but the bet I do like, again, is the prop. United is plus 185 for a clean sheet. So here are the two reasons why I think this is probably the best bet for this match. One, XG on-off splits are super noisy, especially in very limited minutes. But with Casemiro on the pitch, United have only given up 0.94 XG against. That's pretty good. That's like elite top-of-the-table team defensive ability. So I just think that like this might be the start of like United having at least something they can lean on. And then you can turn around, though, and say, well, they just got smashed by Villa about 3-0. Villa scored those three goals on 0.6 XG. So they massively picked out the corners and overperformed that match. And so I think you're actually getting a little bit of a discount on a clean sheet for United here because they've generally been good with Casemiro. They've generally been better defensively. I just think that's the best bet of this match. This is also another one. I will not be watching. I will be reading about World Cup rosters. That's what I will be doing.
We will be texting back and forth probably throughout this entire match because I will be doing the same thing. United were truly dreadful last week, and it's exactly what you would expect if you hand freaking Ronaldo their captain armband. Like, what are they doing? Like, I guess in England, they teach Benedict Arnold was a hero. So what? The guy tried to quit on you. He walked up the tunnel. He was openly trying to leave your team. And 3 weeks later, he's the captain. What is Manchester United doing? They got exactly what they deserved. I don't care if it was overperformance or not. Like, hubris like that deserves to get a beatdown, and they got one. That said, somehow I'm taking them this week. I don't know why, Brett. I don't know why.
There must be so much self-loathing right now on your end.
Well, I watched Fulham without Mitrovic, and short of getting a penalty kick, I don't see how they're going to score. Like, I see that same clean sheet the way you do, and I think that, you know, Manchester United could stumble into a goal butt backwards somehow and win 1-0 or 2-0 here. I mean, we don't see it that differently, but I don't see the reverse. Without Mitrovic and watching them not be able to do anything and get a man down and not having a, you know, their talisman in the lineup, I could see way more scenarios where Manchester United gets undeserved 3 points here than Fulham gets one. So I've got to take the money line at minus 116. But all that said, with what both of our analysis leads to, my favorite bet of this game by far is the under 2.5 goals plus 125.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we don't see how Fulham's going to score, and we're not that all that confident in a Ronaldo-led United attack, or, you know, Sancho, like, brooding out there after being left off of England despite being such a high profile signing 2 years ago. Like, I don't have a great confidence they're going to roll out like a 3-0 victory here or a 2-1. So getting a plus number on the under 2.5 feels like stealing.
As someone who endured the Marco Silva era, actually that was kind of what I'm saying. They finished eighth. Like, that was amazing for Everton. But as someone who has watched a lot of extremely boring Everton Manchester United matches during the Marco Silva era, I rubber stamp anything that is for goals not being scored.
Yeah. Well, we've done it, Brett. I know this wasn't our most exciting show that we've ever done, but we are just saving it for next week because we are going to be so over the top for the World Cup. And it's getting the last bit of energy, conserving it, and then it's going to be like a three-minute long yes to open the next show. but we do have one last bit of business, so let's get to the five pint, and then let us get to our World Cup prep. God, that sentence feels good. last week in the five pint, both of us were plus betters. We were almost dead even, actually. I was at 6.6, you were at 6.5. So we both turned a profit last
week. Neck and neck, baby.
Right neck and neck heading into week two in November. I am going to stack my final pints of November in Premier League, though we'll be betting on the World Cup as well. I'm stacking them first behind Tottenham and Leeds, both to score the yes, minus 150. A little bit of a conservative start at one pint. Southampton, 10-plus shots, plus 120 is at one pint. Newcastle win, plus the over 2.5 goals versus Chelsea, as we discussed, is plus 245. I'm going to take that one for a pint and try to get the jump on you. Arsenal, minus a goal and a half, is plus 145, adjusting that line up for one pint. And I'm staring at the last one, Brett. I'm staring at it. I'm pivoting.
Oh.
I'm not taking the City game. I am going to bet on the suck fest on Sunday morning under 2.5 goals. Manchester suck United fest. And Fulham plus 125.
getting distracted here. I can't even focus on what my picks are. All right. Suck fest aside. Mine are going to be simple. It's just three this week. It's Wolves, Arsenal, no both to score minus 105 for one. I'm going, it's gotta be Leeds. Leeds has got to be in there. First goal Leeds plus 180 for one. And then everything else is going to be on the same one. My favorite one of the week, Liverpool to win, but both teams to score in the Southampton match plus 150 for three pints.
Wow.
So when that match is nil nil, I will be feeling real good.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, I would fade that one if I were you. Anybody is that confident in anything, you got to go on the other side. But we talked about it enough, guys. We appreciate you staying with us for this show. We hope that you enjoy the weekend. It's kind of like a bad day golfing's better than a good day at work. A bad day in the Premier League while everybody's getting ready to jump on the plane to the Middle East is better than a good day watching almost anything else. So we hope that you enjoy those matches. And then next week, Brett and I will be first joining Against All Odds. We'll be joining Sal in the group to do a World Cup preview. And then we will be back right here on this feed talking about the entire World Cup, talking about futures, talking about group props, talking about player props, and giving our thoughts on the first set of games, including the USA opener on Monday the 21st. I believe that's 2 p.m. Eastern.
Let's go.
I've already blocked off my calendar for the entire day to get emotionally ready, spiritually prepared for the return of the red, white, and blue to the world stage. I'm going to give it on the way out, Brett. That's how excited I am. Yeah! It's World Cup time! We will see you here next week. Thanks for joining us.
Take care, y'all.